This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Kunganyi. I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. Now, as you are well aware, we are in the midst of a global health crisis. In March of this year, the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a global pandemic. And since then, over 1.7 million people around the world have been diagnosed with the disease. The death toll is in the thousands and continues to climb. In Africa, as in other parts of the world, the virus has led to the shutdown of every aspect of life, from work, travel, commerce, social events, and many others. And for the past 2 weeks, many governments have asked everyone of their citizens to stay at home and practice social distancing as a way to contain the spread of the virus. Now, this lockdown has far-reaching implications on the lives of people, especially the majority who have little to no savings and have to depend on their daily earnings so as to feed their families. So over the next couple of weeks, we will look at how the pandemic continues to affect life around the continent, from South Africa to Nigeria to Rwanda and many others. We will also examine some of the measures put in place by the various governments as they respond to this pandemic, including lockdowns, providing food and other types of assistance to people who are in lockdown. We'll also look at how some of the healthcare systems in these countries are responding to the pandemic. We'll talk to some of the first responders, including doctors, nurses, and other healthcare workers. Among the issues that we want to explore are some of the popular misconceptions being shared, especially on social media, about the cause and cure of COVID-19. But as much as we want to get an understanding of how COVID-19 continues to affect life on the continent, we want to start off with some of the uniquely African solutions that are being developed by either African governments or African innovators as they respond to this crisis. And our series starts in Kigali, Rwanda, headquarters to the Smart Africa Secretariat, the organization which represents an alliance of 30 African countries and 40 private sector players, is currently working on technological solutions to respond to the coronavirus pandemic, solutions that are uniquely African in nature. These solutions will include tech products to combat the virus, also include platforms to help in the contact tracing and tracking, and even predicting the spread of the virus on the continent. And to start this off, we are joined on Skype by Mr. Lassine Kone, the head of Smart Africa. Mr. Kone is currently teleworking from his home in Kigali, Rwanda, and I start off by asking him to tell us some of the technological challenges or shortfalls, some that we knew, some that we did not know, that the pandemic is exposing, especially that many countries are now in lockdown.
When the coronavirus pandemic actually broke out, and it actually represented a lot of challenges for African countries in general. The first one is the broadband connectivity. On the continent, we have about 34 to 35%, according to GSMA, penetration of broadband connectivity. That's the challenge. Why is it a challenge? Because a lot of government initiative encouraging people to work from home. To be able to work from home, you need to be able to connect.
Right.
One thing. Second thing, the government has been calling people to do, okay, we're going to continue business as usual. How can we continue business as usual if the government services have not come online yet? So it becomes a second challenge. The government also initiative. Another initiative is schools are closed, so students in Europe or in America, students are actually doing, they're not sitting home, they're actually continuing their courses. But in Africa, our kids are sitting home. Why? Because we don't have an e-education platform and distance learning platform for e-school. So it becomes a big challenge. On the top of that, when you add cybersecurity, you know, more on people coming on online at this period of time, you have also a cybersecurity causing another issue, another challenge.
What are some of the interventions you're proposing as a Smart Africa?
Yeah, when this crisis starts, you know, you really have to say no one was expecting this. And of course, you would imagine like every single country, like anywhere else in the world, a country will be running around to find a solution. What do they do? And the nature of this virus actually, which is you have some people who are asymptomatic. I mean, they're sick, they don't even know, and they are contagious. How do you manage all of these in the African context? it becomes a huge challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I meant to say also is the fact that the mobile penetration is very high in Africa, but not everyone owns a smartphone. But at least most of the people own, most of the people, total mobile penetration is about 444 million and out of the 1.3 billion population. Out of that, only 250 million has a smartphone. So it means how do you track people? So a lot of people, a lot of countries started, you know, manual tracking, infected people, and who they've been with for the past 3 days, where did they come from? It becomes a really big challenge.
All right, so this is the health aspect of it in terms of contact tracing and providing, I guess, information and advice to people who might be potentially infected. You're basically crowdsourcing information, and then you're put together on a platform. I'm trying to think of how this will manifest itself. What the platform...
It's all about organization and harmonization, because Smart Africa is about stakeholders management. So we informed the ICT Council of Ministers of Smart Africa, this is the initiative we are going to take. We called for project proposal. So from that solutions will help you do assessment in terms of health-wise. It will help you also use artificial intelligence to inform, communicate with the population, rural area, in their own language. Because we here in the city, we always think that everyone speaks English or everyone speaks French.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge part of the populations in Africa who do not understand other language than their local language. So that will be the communication part of it. And also that will allow us to actually fight a lot of fake news happening today on the social media. Because today, if you look at it, really what the social media does to people is actually more than the disease itself.
Then how do you think you're going to be able to achieve it, given some of the deficiencies in the digital infrastructure that you mentioned, we talked about earlier?
On the top of the project, coming up with the project, once we go through the selection process, tender process, and so on and so forth, we come up with the 2 to 3 solutions. On the other hand, we are actually reaching out to our partners, institutional partners and private partners, to fund these initiatives for a project to come out. So once this is done, then we will approach each single country. You know, we are in touch with them, because remember, the task force we're putting together, countries are part of it. We wrote to them, we need a point of contact from your organization who will be working with Smart Africa together to go through the selection process.
Mm.
And once this is done and the platform comes out and the countries are free to use, what this is actually doing is 2 things at the same time. Of course, we know in Africa, some country would have actually started already the process of choosing one of their startup to come up with a solution for the government.
Right.
It allows startup of each country to compete on the continental level. If the solution is the best, let it be, then we produce it, because as Smart Africa, we do best practice sharing.
Right. That's so, and you have the capability to be able to share it with everybody else instead of it
absolutely
just staying in Kenya.
And not only that, it's very important to say, we would like, our hope is to share with the country free of charge. It is important, because we tend to think that every single country can come up with their own solution, but in reality, there's a budget deficit everywhere. So if we, Smart Africa, we are able to fund this with our sponsors and our partners and actually provide them to the country, that would be our contribution in fighting COVID in each individual country.
Now, most African countries are starting to report their numbers. We've seen that even though it was a little late to come to the continent, that we're seeing some numbers starting to raise. You know, Rwanda has reported a couple of cases even today. Uganda, you know, we talk about East Africa. What do you think is the most urgent that you as Smart Africa would be able to help with?
Tracing infectious people. It's very important. Because what is happening with this virus, when you start feeling the symptom, when the symptoms start showing up, it means you're sick. How the government, with the government capacity, how you can go and trace each individual patients to know where they have been the past 14 days. That is a very task job. That's a very, very hard job. And that's what we want to contribute with this platform. making a tracing capability at the disposal of the government so that it can help them. Because remember, probably you will see tracing each, because it does not only require just a phone call, where have you been? Because there's also authenticity of the information.
Right.
Some people think when you tell the truth, it's going to cause them a problem. But the solution from the government side is the intervention of the big data. The right. big data will tell the truth.
That's even the ability to input some of this data in. If I receive a text message, and how do I respond, and what does it look like the other side? If you're dealing with
exactly, and always remember, your story is better told when it's told by yourself.
This is a week two for you working from home.
Yeah, this is about 21 days now.
21 days from now. What have you learned about your technological capabilities or lack of in these 2 weeks working from home?
In fact, it is actually a mind-blowing experience. I discovered the past 21 days that working from home, you actually work more than you're working in the office. One, because you don't tend to keep track of the time that you spend working.
Right, right.
And you work sometime up to 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and it's a lot of passion. So when the country went locked down from March 15, I've actually instructed my team, everyone to work from home. Every single director, they came up with objective to achieve in the next 2 weeks for their team. So everyone worked from home. So in the morning when we have a call on the Zoom or on the Skype, for example, then we all divided and they have a target to reach at the end of the day. And every Monday, every Friday, we have a call to know exactly where we are. For example, the past 2 weeks, last week, for example, we organized a working group for digital ID, which is a flagship for Benin. Guess what? During the digital ID working group for validation of the blueprint, we had over 70 people on the call from different parts of the world. And we did the opening with the Minister of Benin in charge of digital economy, and followed by my own opening speech. And the team, the whole team, 70 plus people, they stayed 3 days, three hours per day for 3 days to get the document validated. It works. And we also had the broadband strategy, which is another flagship of Senegal. We were able to get about 35 people, which are working group members, and we get the papers validated, all online.
That is Mr. Lassin Kone, head of Smart Africa. He's speaking to me from Rwanda's capital, Kigali. But first, the World Health Organization warns that COVID-19 is spreading at an alarming rate in rural areas of Africa, and that urgent help is needed to strengthen the continent's fragile health system. Latest global figures put the number of coronavirus cases at more than 1.5 million, with death now topping 92,000. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The WHO has confirmed more than 8,300 cases of coronavirus in Africa, including nearly 400 deaths. That figure pales compared to the number of cases elsewhere. However, WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus warns of a spate of cases and deaths that will be hard to control unless African countries get international support to shore up their healthcare systems.
We're now seeing clusters of cases and community spread in more than 16 countries. We anticipate severe hardship for already overstretched health systems, particularly in rural areas, which normally lack the resources of those in cities.
On a slightly happier note, Tedros says the coronavirus pandemic appears to be slowing in some of the hardest hit countries in Europe, including Spain, Italy, Germany, and France. They are among a number of countries globally that have imposed tight restrictions, including self-isolation and social distancing, to stop the transmission of the virus. Tedros notes those measures appear to be working, but he worries that some countries already are planning on lifting the restrictions.
WHO wants to see restrictions lifted as much as anyone. At the same time, lifting restrictions too quickly could lead to a deadly resurgence. The way down can be as dangerous as the way up if not managed properly.
WHO Chief Tedros says a number of factors must be in place before restrictions are lifted. For example, he says countries must make sure transmission of the virus is controlled, medical services are available, outbreaks in special settings such as nursing homes are minimized, and importation risks are lessened. Tedros says every person has a role to play in ending the pandemic. That means governments must ensure communities are fully aware and committed to lifting restrictions before they move ahead. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's get back to our conversation with Mr. Lassine Kone, head of Smart Africa, based in Kigali, Rwanda. Now, Mr. Kone, you were talking to us about some of the strategies that have been adopted to maximize on the teleworking experience. As much of the continent enters lockdown mode, have you thought about sharing some of these initial experiences as far as teleworking is concerned with either your member states and other stakeholders?
Absolutely. That's why we are coming out with a set of recommendations in terms of a broadband connectivity. What country need to have, what do they need to do, how they can argue, how they can go and work around the e-education issue, what platform they need to have. So we're sharing this experience also with our country members. And in fact, we are preparing now in the next 2 weeks to actually call for an ICT, Council of ICT ministerial meeting. It will all be online because we do have a lot of work in the pipeline which was supposed to be presented during the Transform Africa Summit in Guinea, which was postponed. So we are just going to continue. I've instructed my team to say, this is a new normal. It's not like we're working in the crisis time. This is the new normal. We have to get used to it. So let's take our action plan, which was approved by the board last year, and we continue working online, just like nothing happened. And that is the new normal.
You're in that phase where you're still getting feedback, these projects from innovators around the continent. Are there others outside of the continent, or are you just calling only African innovators to submit projects?
No, we do have international international company who applied.
Okay.
But on the one condition, the data must be in Africa.
Okay. Data should be in Africa.
Data should be stored in Africa. That is a condition for us to look at your proposal.
I mean, do you have the capacity? Does the continent have the capacity to store that type of data?
Of course.
Okay.
Because this is the data sovereignty. You see, the data sovereignty, data protection, and personal data protection is very important. And for many countries, we know, although we don't have a continent-wide cybersecurity data protection law, which is in Malabo Convention, has only been ratified by 5 countries. Every single country, they have a sort of data protection law. So when we are introducing this platform with our stakeholders, which are the country members, you have to give them flexibility when they say, oh, we would like our data, the patient data, to be in the country. So if you have an international company who is willing to develop this platform and to come along with us, so the number one condition should be the data should be stored in Africa.
Well, what are some of the risk factors associated with the data not being on the continent?
Oh, big risk. First of all,
just privacy issues or?
Yes, of course, it's the personal data protection because this data, it's sellable. They can sell it to pharmaceutical industry to develop vaccine. It's the market data. And they know who you are. They know your name, your phone number, your location, everything. It's a personal information data. It's a personal. So the data protection law apply here.
Okay. So you're suggesting that each member country has its own like data bank.
Exactly. It's the customizable. It's the personalized. You deploy in the country. The data is stored in the country. And the data is under the control of the government. It's not under control of the private sector who can manipulate data later on.
Let's talk about some of the projects you've been receiving so far. You said you're over 300 so far you've received.
345.
What are some of the interesting things that you're looking at and it's giving you hope that what you're doing is actually you're on the right track with this?
From 345, it's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And you see, We are learning a lot of experience from what happened in Asia, in Europe, in Eastern Europe, in America, because we have people who presented the proposal from all over the world. So that actually, that diversity is actually is a wealth. It makes database very rich. So what we're learning from the get-go, when you look at this crisis, if you want to solve this technologically, you might think, oh, it's just a matter of one app. Actually, the patient will be saying, okay, yes, I'm sick. I'm assessing himself. No, it's actually deeper than that. So there will be a front-end application, either USSD or app, and there's a back-end process, which is based on big data. The big data allow you to see the traceability the past 2 weeks, the way the person has been, or people that you actually put in quarantine, have they been moving or not?
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Dunganyi in Washington, D.C. I'm speaking to Mr. Lassine Cornet, the head of Smart Africa. Mr. Cornet, so talk to us about the next phase after the submissions are done and you've selected. How long does it take, or will it take? How long do you expect these companies that you've selected to deploy whatever product they're coming up with?
Once we award this contract, the person has 1 week to deliver the product.
Is that feasible?
It is feasible because, look, people know we are in a crisis moment. In a crisis moment, it basically is you do extraordinary things you actually won't believe it. Right. Before we launch this call for project, people know we will be asking them a demo. So the second step to our evaluation is to say, who has a demonstration of the platform? Because we are not reinventing the wheel entirely. No. We are not reinventing the wheel because I know there's a lot of company out there, they already put up a platform together which can actually do this job. It might need some customization, personalization, so on and so forth. So these are the people we're gonna be going after. We're not gonna go after people, company who will say, okay, we will be designing this from scratch. We didn't have any response before.
Okay. That makes sense. So then I guess we'll be talking to mostly people already, companies that are already established in whatever spaces they. How many people are you targeting? I know we did talk about how only almost 200 million people in Africa have access to smartphones. Digital divide, obviously, the conversation we can have for ages. But realistically, how many people do you think are going to benefit from this?
Put it this way, out of 1.3 billion populations in Africa, Smart Africa country members, we are about 800 million consumers among the 30 countries. From the 800 million consumers, if you look on the average, broadband connectivity is about 35%. So we're basically targeting not everyone that has a cell phone, a smartphone. We're also targeting even our grandmother who only have a features phone. When you look at that, so it would depend on the mobile technology penetration in each country. Usually the mobile technology is actually higher than just a smartphone penetration in all those countries. So for give or take, if you're thinking out of 800 billion consumer, if we think 35% have a broadband connectivity, so you're probably talking about 300 million, 400 million.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London on Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Whoa. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists, win prizes, and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Welcome back. You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. My guest today is Mr. Lassine Cornet of Smart Africa. Now, WHO statistics show that while the global COVID-19 cases are climbing exponentially, The number of Africans infected by the virus is still relatively low when compared to countries like the US or Italy, but that number is increasing as we see more testing around the continent. So my question to you, Mr. Kone, is that given that some developed countries have been battling this virus for months on, what are some of the lessons and strategies that can be drawn from these countries as African policymakers and African innovators battle to contain the spread of the virus in their communities?
This has been quite an experience. And you see what happened to Asia, what happened in Europe, what's happening in America now, it should give Africa a lesson. Every single country has a different model how to tackle this. Some people will do a confinement early. Some people will do a lockdown early. Some people will not do a lockdown. Some people will do social distancing. A combination of all of these confinements, social distancing, lockdown, and all of that, all have an impact on the curve. How do you want to go? If you take the Swedish model, for example, there is no lockdown. There's a little social distancing. They're assuming that there will be a collective immune system once the virus infect about 70% of the population. But the trade-off here, you will have a lot of people who will die, and you may be able to save your economy. So the trade-off here, do you want to save people by locking down earlier, by using all of these parameters to flatten the curve? Or if you do that, if you do a lockdown and all that, of course, you will get hit economically. Or do you want your economy to continue prospering and you may lose a lot of people?
Right.
So we, Africa, we must learn from all of these techniques. And if you see today, different nation, different country in Africa, they are actually observing. In Rwanda here, for example, we have a lockdown. All the airports closed. The borders are closed. We're working from home. Everything is online because Rwanda, of course, you know that Rwanda is much more advanced than most of the African cities. So, like in terms of mobile connectivity and mobile money and so on and so forth. But if you look at the west part of Africa, for example, people are still working from the morning to 2 o'clock, from the morning to two afternoon. So different measures will actually produce different results in terms of how many lives you actually be able to save. So if we, Smart Africa, we can contribute in any way technologically to alleviate that burden, that will be the best that we can do. And we'll be happy to do that.
It is. So let me ask you to predict, if you can put, look into the magic, eight ball. How do you see this playing out? And what kind of companies are going to survive this in terms of, because there's talk that the countries that have been using, relying heavily on technology to do their work, that they will be able to survive this, the economic fallout and all that. How will the governments after this?
This is a big test for African countries. You will see that countries that have a good broadband connectivity to support teleworking, not only that, broadband connectivity, platforms for teleworking, and also has government services online, they will have a very resilient economy because teleworking, everyone will be doing teleworking. Even the schools, when the schools are closed, the kids, because of the high broadband penetration, people will be online to take classes. So there will be a very minor disruption in our way of life. You will see other country that does not, the country that did not take ICT or put ICT at the center of the socio-economic development, they will be hit hard. Because if you need to do everything manually, when you say teleworking, Africa, the informal business is actually bigger than the formal business. So an informal will be hit because it's all manual work, it's all labor work, it's not digitized, it's not transformed. Those economies will suffer. So I really mean it, connectivity, broadband connectivity, platform for teleworking, government e-services, e-education in place, cybersecurity law, these are the countries who will be a winner at the end.
That was Mr. Lassine Kone, head of Smart Africa. He was speaking to me from his home in Kigali, Rwanda, where he's currently teleworking. The city is under lockdown. And we want to thank him for joining us today. And I also want to thank you for tuning into the show, whether you are listening in on our FM stations around the continent or online or any other platforms. Until next time, I wish you good health. Goodbye, everyone.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Liz Pell.